Okay, we're in James chapter 4 and in verse 13, and I'm going to try to get through to verse 6 of chapter 5, and then next time we will plan on finishing James. And then I'm pretty sure I know what we're going to start up after this, but I'm not going to tell you yet because I might change my mind. So I'll have that prepared and have those handouts ready next Wednesday. What are we talking about in this chapter 4? What have we been discussing? What's the subject of chapter 4? Being humble. Because pride promotes what? Strife. Pride promotes strife, and these people were coveting one another and coveting each other's things and seeking after those things. And then on top of that, they were seeking after the world, and they were committing adultery against God with the world. We talked about that friendship with the world is enmity with God. And then there's a cure to this, and that is to humble yourself and to submit to God. You draw near to Him, He's going to draw near to you. We have to seek after righteous things in order to get these righteous rewards which God promises toward us. Talks about not judging a brother. This was an unrighteous judgment. This was a judgment that was prideful in nature and arrogant, saying that I'm better than you because of this, and judging someone based on your own opinions and seeking to gain just whatever it is you're trying to gain through that judging, as opposed to bringing them closer to Christ and convicting them of their sins so that they can repent of them. And so following all of this, we get into another aspect of pride and arrogance that James addresses. In verse 13 of chapter 4, he says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." And so we have this idea of arrogance, and that someone thinks they have tomorrow as a guarantee. And they think they can say and plan what they want to do without having God in mind. This is something that is arrogant. It's foolish to think that you can make plans for the future and have that confidence in those things as opposed to confidence in God. He says this is a foolish thing. We already expressed that idea in verses 4 through 6, that friendship with the world is enmity with God. Well, this idea here that someone is saying, come today and tomorrow we'll go to such a city, spend a year there, but buy and sell and make a profit. They have that physical mindset. They're going after physical things. They're laying up for themselves treasures on earth as opposed to treasures in heaven. They have a fondness of the world. They want to work their way up the ladder. They want to be rich, and they'll do anything to do this. And so they're making plans for the future to do these things, not just gaining these riches and then using them for good, as we see that is possible. Just because you're rich does not mean you're sinning or that you are condemned to hell, but it's that love of riches and then that using the riches in a sinful way that's going to condemn you. And so this follows along with having friendship with the world. These people are not seeking after God. Instead, they're seeking after physical gains and these monetary values. And so they're not making spiritual plans. We see in verse 14 that you do not know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and vanishes away. This is a humbling fact to know that we don't know when our life is coming to an end. You see examples of this in real life examples in a young person being hit by a drunk driver, and then their life comes to an end. You think about a vapor. It just comes up and then it dissipates. You don't see it anymore. With the cold weather being how it is and the storms up north, I've seen a few videos of people boiling water, and they walk out into the sub-zero temperatures and they throw that boiling water into the air, and it goes into a gas and evaporates right then and there. It doesn't even have time to hit the ground. That's our life. That's how fast it is in the scheme of things. And that God has always existed. He always will exist compared to our life. Our life is nothing compared to God's existence. And it's just but a vapor. And so people who have that arrogance in making plans for the future for their own physical gains, they're not looking at the whole picture. They're just seeing the physical things. They're not focusing on the spiritual things. And because of that, they're going to end up regretting this when their life vanishes, because it's just for a moment. With that fact, it's very humbling. If you want to turn to Matthew 6, in verse 19. Matthew 6 and verse 19, of course, is a couple of verses that we all seem to be familiar with. It says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, but where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also." That idea expressed in that last verse, what does he mean? Where your treasure is, your heart will be also. Aside from the fact of just quoting the verse we just read. You love what you treasure. You talk about the heart in Scripture. It's not the blood pump. And you talk about love. It's not the romanticism and affection that everyone thinks about. But their actions and their the heart is your mind. It's what you do. It's what you're always thinking about. So where your heart will be, your treasure is, your heart will be also. So the things you're seeking after, the things you're trying to attain through whatever means necessary, that's what you're going to be thinking about all the time. You see in Philippians 4:8, meditate on these things, whatever things are pure, lovely, and good report, that you should meditate on these things. That's where your heart's going to be. That's where your treasures are going to be. We know these as spiritual blessings, as fruit of the Spirit, in which we're all to have as Christians. And in doing so, we'll receive that crown of life. And so if our treasures are in those things, those are the things we seek, those are the things that we value, then our hearts are going to be surrounded by those things. Our hearts are going to be in those things, and that's what we're going to be doing. And so where our treasure is, our heart will be also. These people in James chapter 4, they are seeking to get monetary things, physical values, instead of heavenly treasures. And they're not looking to God for their confidence in things. They're looking to themselves and their own ability to say, let's make plans and go do this. This is not suggesting that it's evil or sinful to make plans. We make plans. You don't want to not be prepared for something in the future by not making plans. But at the same time, we need to understand, like we'll say later, if the Lord wills, we'll do this and that. In 1 Peter 2 and verse 11, 1 Peter 2 and verse 11, we see Christians are likened to pilgrims or sojourners. He says, "I beg you, sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may be your good works, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation." What's a pilgrim? Talk about the pilgrims coming over and settling in America. What's a pilgrim? It's a foreigner, right? Someone from a different land. They're not made for this world, or they're not used to it. They're coming from somewhere different. As pilgrims, this is not our home. We're not supposed to be a part of the world. We live in the world. But as Romans 12 and verse 2 says, do not be conformed to the world. And so while the focus in everyone's life, if they are not religious, if they don't have Christ in their lives, their focus is on physical things. And if you put all spiritual things aside and you don't even consider those, then what's the purpose of life? To get as rich as possible, to be as famous as possible, to get all of these physical things that are valued in the eyes of humans. And all these things are supposed to be foreign to us. We're not supposed to want to grasp for these things. We're not supposed to make plans without God's will in accordance with these things. We're not supposed to be seeking these things. That scene also, this idea in the first chapter of James, when we talked about the rich man and the lowly brother. In verse 9 of chapter 1, he says, "Let the lowly brother glory in his exaltation, but the rich in his humiliation, because as a flower of the field he will pass away. For no sooner has the sun risen with a burning heat than it withers from the grass. Its flower falls and its beautiful appearance perishes. So the rich man will also fade away in his pursuits." So this is the same thing. He's kind of reiterating a point. He's making this point again, saying that the rich are going to be looking toward these things. They're making plans about these things, and that's showing their arrogance and that they don't have a confidence in God. They have a confidence in themselves. They're going to fade away. Their life is but a vapor. It'll fade away, and their life is like that flower in the field that's going to be seared, and it's going to wither away. It's just talking about our life is short. And if we focus on these things, then it's going to come to a point where we don't have any time left, and we've wasted our entire lives on things that are going to fade away, such as these treasures. Any comments or questions? Just stop me if you want to say something. Verse 15, he says, instead of this, instead of making these plans, not having confidence in God, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. When someone makes these plans, and it's obvious that they're not doing this with God in mind, they're not having these spiritual things as their priority, and they're not having this as God wills and only as God wills, it suggests here that they don't understand God's in control, or they don't want to believe that God's in control. So they're trying to take control themselves, when really we read in the Old Testament that any purpose God has that he wants to have for us, or he has a purpose to do something, he's going to get it done. It's going to happen. If he wants it to happen, it's going to happen. If he doesn't want it to happen, it's not going to happen. But the people who make these plans without God in their mind are not thinking about this. And they think that they control their lives. They think that they control just everything in life and the things that happen. And if you fail to recognize that God is in control, you fail to recognize that life is but a vapor, it's going to pass away, then you're going to get yourself in trouble by boasting, by your arrogance. We're talking about this pride and this arrogance that's involved in this. You think you know what's going to happen. You think you can control what happens. Instead, you should say, the Lord will. As Paul says in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He didn't say, I can do all things because I'm capable of it. He said, I can do all things through Christ. So give the glory to God, give the glory to Christ, and place your confidence in him and not in the flesh and in your own abilities. Because this is arrogance, and it says this kind of boasting is sinful, and all boasting is evil. You go over to Psalm 10. Psalm 10 and beginning in verse 4, we see that the wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. So we see that this wicked man that's making these plans is not thinking about God. That's the furthest thing from his mind in seeking these riches. It's not a problem. It's not a concern. His ways are always prospering. Your judgments are far above, out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he sneers at them. He has said in his heart, I shall not be moved. I shall never be in adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is trouble and iniquity. So we see those that are seeking these physical things, they don't even have God in their minds. They don't have God as a priority in their life. That's going to get them nowhere. This is fleeting, and this is a prideful mindset. Anything else? Yes.
You also got the rich man there in Luke 12. Had the same exact problem.
Exactly.
Had all these things, and he had so much acquired that he built a bigger barn. He kept talking about himself, what should I do with these things? What should I do with this? What should I do with this? What should I do with this? And God called him a fool. He didn't call God. He didn't put God first in his life. He said, if I call your soul tonight, what's going to happen to you?
Exactly. And that's the point of things. You can make plans because you're not being a responsible, like, take it as the role of a father. He makes a plan for finances. He saves money in case of an emergency. He goes out and works, and the wife and the mother does this as well. And the children do the things around the house, make plans to please their mother and father. These are good things. You make these plans, but you don't do them for the sake of gaining these for your own well-being. You want to do these saying, if it is God's will, because what the point of life is to fear Him, keep His commandments. This is man's all, Ecclesiastes 12 and 13. If you lose sight of that, like Jeff said, that rich man, he lost sight of this, and he was making all these plans. That's fine if he's making these plans, as long as he's looking to God first, and he would choose God over these things. But that's all he was concerned about. And when we do that, we're not thinking, and then something's going to happen, or God's going to come, Jesus is going to come again, something, He's going to require our soul. And if we're in that state of mind, we're not going to be ready for this. We're going to regret everything that we planned for in our arrogance. Anything else? Yes.
It's funny how he mentions a few times as well about being humble in chapter 4, and then again he mentions it somehow again in verse 15, mm-hmm. or in verse 16, how you boast in your arrogance. Such boasting is evil. Then again, you're so proud of yourself, then you boast and you're arrogant, and that's evil. So it's funny how he incorporates all those things throughout the whole chapter.
Right. Yeah, that's what you see in this whole chapter, that idea of the evil pride and arrogance and what that causes and the destruction that causes. And then the cure to this is humility, being humble in all your ways and understanding God's in control. And that arrogance that is seen here in verse 16 is that which shows he thinks he's in control. And that's boasting about your own abilities that, you know, most likely aren't even present. You don't have an ability to control your life and to control the things around you. God is in control. And so it all comes down to that humility. To humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, He will lift you up, as we learned about verse 7 through 10. Verse 17 says, therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. This can go with a lot of things. A big reason for some people to not come to obedience to the gospel, to not come to that realization that they need to do this, is because they think they can put it off and wait some other time. In this context, we see your life is but a vapor. You don't know when we're going to die. You don't know when Christ is going to come again. It's that fast. And once it does come, you'll realize how fast it is. And in putting this off, knowing to do good, knowing to come to Christ, to obey Him and start that walk, or even as a Christian, knowing to go out into the world, preach the gospel, knowing to pursue these spiritual things, and you're not doing it because, oh, I can be a better Christian tomorrow. That's a big problem with New Year's resolutions. I'll just wait until the first of the year. I'll start then. That's the best time to start. Or I'll wait till Monday. It's the beginning of the week. I'll start then. Being a better Christian, or abstaining from this part of my life that's causing me to falter and to be in that temptation. For him who knows to do good and does not do it, for him, that is sin. You don't even have to inherently be sinning or be in sin. If you're seeing something that you need to do that is beneficial, that is good in the sight of God, and you don't do it, and you procrastinate, that in itself is sinful. Like I mentioned in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13, our purpose is to fear God and keep His commandments. If we're putting that off in any way, form or fashion, we're sinning. If we know to do good and we don't do it, we sin. And we see in Matthew 12 and verse 30 that he who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters abroad. And so if you're sitting idle and you're not doing anything, or you're putting things off, you're not with Christ. You're not on his side. And so you're opposed to him, and through that there is evil. And him that knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. Anything else? Yes.
You know, some people say, well, I know I should do such and such, but, you know, when they admit right then, you know, that there's something that's lacking in their life. Would make the right choice.
Exactly. And then they'll joke about it. They'll say, I know I should do it. Oh, I'm a bad guy. You know, you shouldn't be around me. And yeah, I shouldn't be doing that. I should probably get my act together. And they joke about it. And while they're waiting to do this, or while they're just deciding not to do this, and they know that it's good to do that, they know that what they're doing is wrong or is not beneficial, then that's sinful. You can bring that to the friendship with the world is enmity with God idea, that it may not be inherently sinful. Paul says to lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. It doesn't have to be sinful. If it's weighing you down and it's prohibiting you from serving God with your full potential, and you know that it's doing that, and you know that it would be good to lay that weight off, then you're sinning by not doing it. I think we can get that from this passage. If you know to do good and you don't do it, it's sinful. That can come with those types of things. If you know that something is going to help you as a Christian, it's going to further your chances spreading the kingdom and getting to heaven, and you don't do it, you're sinning and not doing that. We need to strive to get to heaven in any way we can. We need to do the will of the Lord to its fullest. We need to try to be the best Christian we can be day after day after day. If we're not trying to do that, we're sinning. That's why no one's going to escape by the skin of their teeth. No one's going to barely get into heaven, because the only people get into heaven are those who are going to continually strive for heaven, strive for perfection. Imitate me as I imitate Christ, Paul says, 1 Corinthians 11:1. And so if we know to do good and we don't do it, we're in sin.